Hello and welcome to episode 15 of the Training Tidbits podcast. I'm your host Ryan Cartledge from Animal Training Academy, and as always it's an absolute pleasure to be in your eardrums today. I hope your week has been going well and your animals have received loads of positive reinforcement for their abundance of desirable behaviours. As always, we are going to be delivering you a wonderful conversation today on positive reinforcement animal training and bringing on another Animal Training Academy member and positive reinforcement practitioner. This time we are staying put right here in New Zealand and talking to a New Zealander or a Kiwi, whatever you want to call her. Someone actually told me the other day that they just enjoy listening to the podcast just so they can hear the accent. And you know what? This is grand because we're educating people about the most positive and less intrusive animal training techniques any which way we can. And to have my natural speaking voice be a vehicle for that, well, that's just fantastic. And today we have double trouble, two Kiwis, and we're going to be talking about truffle hunting. Now, if you're anything like me, and this is the first time you've heard this term, you might be sitting there going, what on earth is truffle hunting? Well, do not you worry. We're going to tell you all about this wonderful doggy activity, and we're going to do so with our guest today, Karen Drummond. Karen is the founder of the New Zealand-based dog training venture called Learning About Dogs, which started all the way back in 2003 and has been growing ever since. Karen started off doing occasional training classes and importing educational and training resources to New Zealand. But over time, this has grown in scope, with Karen now being instrumental in organising educational seminars right here in New Zealand and bringing over international keynote speakers with the likes of Dr. Susan Friedman, Teresa McEwen, Dr. Sophia Yin, and Grisha Stewart, to name a few, which I think is super cool because obviously we benefit greatly here in New Zealand from Karen doing this, and she's even helped me organise similar things myself, so she just keeps on giving. And it was back in around 2011 when Karen started training her first dog to truffle hunt, and Karen had found something that she was deeply passionate about. In fact, to quote Karen directly from her LinkedIn page, she said, "A great experience when working a truffle dog through the truffle orchard. Watching my dogs individually carrying out scent work around each tree, searching for the scent which will give them their reward, is like poetry in motion." So I'm really excited about this because we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people might have never heard of before, and also talking about scent training with dogs, which is something I want to learn way more about. So without further ado, a very warm welcome to you, Karen Drummond. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Ryan. How are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. Hey, Karen, that was a really quick intro there. Is there anything that I've missed? Maybe you want to fill in the gaps a little bit for everyone, or did I sum it up pretty well?
I think you summed it up pretty well, actually.
Oh, big pat on the back for me.
Definitely.
Very cool. Okay, let's dive straight in. To start off, Karen, can you take us back and let everyone know how you first got into positive reinforcement animal training and what were some of the first animals you remember ever training using it?
The reason why actually I got into positive reinforcement was that I was at a dog club with a Tibetan Spaniel, and he wouldn't walk on leash, he wouldn't sit when he was told to sit, so I was told to put him on a choke chain, and I was told to push down his bum to put him onto the ground, or I was told to push him down at the shoulders to make him down. And I'd only been going about 3 or 4 weeks when I heard that UK lady was coming over called Kay Lawrence, and Kay was holding a workshop at the dog club that I was going to be at, and I went to the workshop and I took Paddy, my Tibetan Spaniel, with me, and we just went there to sit and watch. And Kay's not that kind of person, so when I was there, Kay suddenly went, "What are you doing here? You've got your dog, come on, join in, let's go." And I said, "But I don't understand about clicker training, I don't know what it's about, I don't know how to do it, and my dog does nothing that I ask it to do." Of which she got hold of my Tibetan Spaniel with his nose pointing towards her knees, and she said, "I'll teach you how to do a circle." And she walked around to his bum, called him, turned. She gave him some food and she went, "There you go, he can do half a circle. Now let's get the other half going." And that was how I got involved. And it was just an absolutely amazing experience.
That's a really good story. And thanks for sharing that, Karen. I always find it interesting to hear about other people's learning odysseys. So really appreciate you telling us about that. Let's move on to what we mentioned at the start of this podcast and talk about this truffle hunting. Can you explain, preferably in depth, what is truffle hunting and the method that a dog goes through to learn how to hunt a truffle? And for people out there as well, probably don't know, what is a truffle?
Well, it's kind of strange to call it truffle hunting because I call it now more truffle surveying. A truffle is like a mushroom, but it grows underground and it grows for a very short season. And depending on what kind of truffle you're going for, depends on when it's going to be due. So there's multiples different types of truffles. and they grow under a variety of different trees. So you might have perigord, which grows underneath an oak tree or a hazelnut. You may have the bianchettos or the balky that grow underneath pine trees. So there's a variety of different environments that truffles actually grow in. So the first thing you have to understand is that these smell a lot. So it's very easy to train a dog to actually look for the truffle because it's such a strong scent, but it's a very unique scent. Very hard to explain what it smells like as well. Some smell quite garlicky, some can be chocolatey, some can smell like the smell of the forest when you move the leaves back and you smell the wet forest floor. A lot of them can smell like that as well, but it's a unique scent. So I learnt about truffles because friends of mine own a truffery and or truffier, sorry. And they said jokingly one day, you know, why don't you train your dog up? Because they were arguing about whether they should get a dog or not. And they decided that they wouldn't. And they said, why don't you train your dog up? I had a little Sydney Silky Cross Maltese. And he was a wee little lad, but he'd been pushed from pillar to post of different homes. So when I got him, he was really keen on learning. He was a wonderful little boy. He was just so energetic and he was so easy to train the scent. So much so that after a few weeks, I contacted my friends and said, he's ready to go now. So they came up and they put some samples out for me because I only use real truffle. And so put the samples out for me and there was 8 samples. I didn't know where they were. The dog didn't know where they were. So it's called a double blind because neither of us knew where places they were hidden. So then we went outside after a cup of tea because you always stop and have a cup of tea in between time, give the scent a chance to permeate the air. And then we went outside and we were just chatting. And then suddenly Ollie went, excuse me, you lot, I'm busy. And he went away and found all 8 samples for us. So the samples that we had for him were above the ground, whereas most truffles are under the ground or just starting to erupt through the ground surface. So training Ollie, I took him down to my friend's place because it's not only about the scent. As well as the actual hunting for the truffle, you have to teach your dog to either run free and come back to you, or you need to teach them how to work on harness. And if you're teaching them to work on harness, you now need to teach them a search pattern because some dogs will only go up and down a row. Others will want to go from side to side. So it's what's best for the dog and conserving his energy. On top of that, you've also got to think about all the distractions that you're going to meet. So normally you'll meet rat holes, mice holes, rabbit holes, and they're a bit dangerous because you fall in those. And then you've also got what we call fantails down here, and they're little cheeky birds that will actually fly down and get all the insects around your feet or around the dog's paws as they're walking. So that's a huge distraction, especially for the bird dogs that I use. But they come down, they jump in front of you and they're all over the place. And then you've got other things that may also distract, like cows or sheep, because it's normally on farms. And the truffiers that we've got down here are all owned by private people because we don't naturally have truffles in New Zealand. So they're all on farming land, which means that you're going to meet cows and ducks and you've got all the other strange animals, like some have got alpacas. So you have to generalize all your training for all of those scenarios, because the most important thing for any of these dogs is finding the truffle. So once my dogs are in a truffery and they got the trees all lined up, my dogs go to the first tree and they work. Anything else, any of the other distractors, they might see, but they know that they're looking for a truffle. So they'll work really hard to find the truffle. And that's what you need in a dog when you're actually hunting, something that's so focused that they're going to go and look everywhere to find this truffle.
Fantastic. I love learning about this. I've got a million questions, but we'll move on. Karen, you kind of mentioned a couple of dogs there. From my understanding, you've done this with 3 of your own dogs.
I have. I had Ollie, who is a Sydney Silky Cross Maltese. So it shows that any breed can actually do it. He was absolutely stunning at finding the truffles. Unfortunately, as my business grew, his legs didn't grow along with it, and I had to retire him, as he would do 200 trees in about an hour and a half, whereas my new dog, a Cocker Spaniel, can do 300 trees in 20 to 30 minutes. So it's a huge difference between the two. I also have a Springer Spaniel called Haggis, and he's just coming on board now. He's just coming up 2 years old. He's in his teenage years, so he's a bit rambunctious at the moment, but he'll come right.
I love that name, Haggis. any stories about working with those dogs, and were they significantly different in their training, or did you find the training quite universal?
No, the training I don't think is universal. It's always the training of one, and that's really important, because even if you have the same breed, every single dog that you train has got its own personality, same as way that we do as humans. And my little Ollie, my Sydney Silky Cross, he was in your face, demanding that you train him, demanding that he was getting it right. My Cocker Spaniel is demanding to go outside because she wants to locate truffles. Put her outside and she's searching every tree. Whereas Haggis, the Springer Spaniel, he's just like, danger. I should be paid danger money actually with him, but he is dangerous because when we go truffle hunting, or when I was training him, I should say, for truffle hunting, he would knock over all of the jars. He would send them flying across the room. He can move a concrete block just to be able to get into the truffle. And he's just big and really scary, really, with his work. But with Haggis, being a puppy, I got him at 10 weeks old and I tried to sit and teach him the sit and the wait. I had issues where he would put his bum on the ground, but then he'd wiggle it slightly. So instead of reprimanding him and saying, that's really bad, I only want you to sit and keep your bum on the ground, I decided to shape the wiggle. And so now what I've got is a dog that runs backwards at high speed because I trained him to go back. And so now I can go back and he'll just keep running backwards because that was the outcome from it. But now out of that also, I've also got a strong sit and wait because unless he gets the back cue, he'll sit there and hold his time.
There's a nice example. It's a great technique to use when you've got those types of behaviours.
I love free shaping. It's really good value.
Fantastic. And I'm curious, where'd the name Haggis come from?
I hadn't named him. He was like 10 weeks old and I hadn't named him. He'd been with me a few weeks, so he must have been about 14 weeks old. And he did something really stupid. Like, I think he fell down the back steps or something. But then he got up and went for the back steps, blaming them for the fall. And I just went, oh, you're a Haggis. And that was how he got his name. It was like, oh, that really suits you.
There you go. I hope I get to meet Haggis and not do this in the future. Hey, that just sounds absolutely great. Maybe we can expand a little bit on this topic we've been talking about and discuss more about scent work and the value of scent work with dogs. Do you have maybe for the people listening out there that have their own dogs at home, any fun tips and games people can do with their pet dogs that would be beneficial for them to learn about?
I think scent work is really good for the dogs that are quite busy or even if you've got aggression. And there's a lot of good groups out there now that are running canine scent sports classes, whether it's another dog or it's a bicycle or whatever. But with scent work, because you're focusing them onto a scent, it allows them to ignore those things, so you get the generalization coming in, so it will stop chasing bikes because you've encouraged it to go and look for a scent and you're focusing it and you're working with it. So it can drop the aggression quite a bit on a lot of dogs. So there's a lot of good groups out there that you can certainly join and go and see. So you might want it where it finds a ball and it's a ball that smells like vanilla. So you can go and teach it to look for vanilla and find the ball, or you can go and find another scent. You can do little games like finding your son. If you've got a little toddler that keeps on running off, you can teach it to go and find your son either through scent or through name. So you could say, let's say the little boy's called Ryan, and Ryan keeps on running and he climbs over walls and he escapes all out of the compound.
He sounds awesome.
Definitely. Well, you can actually train your dog to go and track him down and find him. So that might be one of the scents that you get to go and find. And you can do it with mum and dad as well. You can say, go find mum and go find dad. They can look for you and you can play hide and seek with them. But certainly the dog clubs around that do scent work, they use three different scents. I think one's clove, one might be vanilla, and I can't remember the third one, but it might be birch, actually. And they can certainly help you if you're interested in doing scent work. And you do competitions in those as well.
Yeah, and Colin, I like the idea of when we're talking about aggression, what do we want the dog to do instead? And to answer that question by saying, go smell something, go do something you're designed to do.
They can't do what they want to do because they're focusing on something else, and that helps them heaps.
So that's very useful for not just aggression, for a whole host of behaviours.
Yeah, chasing, they like to chase wheels or things. Destructive chewing. Yeah, you can always give them something else to do.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. It's been so cool learning about truffle hunting and talking scent stuff with you, Karen. A couple more questions before we finish up today. I was just wondering if we could discuss any other stories that maybe stick out in your, because you've had 17, 15 years, how many years you've been kind of...
Yeah, something like that. Don't tell anyone.
any other stories from your experience that stick out in your mind and valuable lessons that you've learned along the way?
I think there's quite a lot that you learn about yourself when you're doing this kind of work, as in working with a dog. Whether you're a pet dog owner or a pet trainer, I do just as much learning from my dogs as the dogs do from me. And it's always a conversation between us, even though we don't speak the same language. Certainly through marker training or clicker training, I find that it is a language that we can talk to each other about. And by clicking and letting him know what I like, he may well increase doing that. But if he doesn't like it, so if my dogs don't like doing circles and they do that once and they clicked and they don't want to do it, the fact they never do it again, I'm not going to force them. I'll go and look for a behavior that suits that breed or that dog. So my English pointer that I had, he was called Rupert Bear. Rupert just loved jumping. So I put that on cue. And every time I said jump, he would jump about 4 feet into the air. And he got to the stage where he would wiggle and growl as he came down. And he'd just do it again and again. It was like a rabbit. And he absolutely loved it. I train my animals what they enjoy doing and make the most of it, really.
Training's meant to be fun, right?
Exactly, for both of you, not exactly. Just for you. It should be for both of you.
Cool. Hey, just before we move on to the next question, Karen, something that you and I were talking about before we pushed record was tag teaching, and you shared a great story about how you learned to shoot a bow and arrow. So I was wondering if, because you brought Teresa McEwen over to New Zealand a few years ago to do her tag teaching workshop. I really liked that story you shared. So could you share that one just before we move on to the last question?
Sure. I decided a few years ago to go up to a clicker expo, and I was very tired. It was about the third day in the afternoon. I was really shattered, and I was supposed to move out of the room that I was in and go and listen to someone else, but I was just too tired, so I stayed. And it was Teresa McEwen, and she was doing tag teach, which is targeted acoustic guidance. And I thought, I'm going to sleep through this. Within 5 minutes, I was on my feet. I was learning how to kick balls. And it was at that point I thought, I'm going to take this back and I'm going to get my archery teacher to actually teach me archery using tag teach. So I came back to New Zealand and I booked some lessons with my archery teacher and went over and said to Carol, hey, look, I'd like you to teach me archery, but I'd like you to do it my way. And Carol is very open-minded and she said, yep, okay. So we started the lesson and Carol spoke and spoke and spoke and I wasn't getting any better. And then she went, okay, let's try it your way. So I explained to her about marker training and using the clicker and clicking me when I was in the right position, using the correct position. And so we started to do this and she did about another half hour of work with me and used the clicker. And it was about getting your feet into position first. So your feet have to be your width of your hips apart. And then you go from there, learning how to pick up the bow, hold the bow right, pull back the bow. And the issue that I'd gone to Carol about was that every time I pulled the bow back, my left hip would go forwards as if I needed that as a weight, to counterweight, if you like, to pulling the bow back. And that was the main reason why I went there. So we worked on this and she clicked, and my reward was to see her smile, the fact that I was in the right position. That's all I needed. Smile from her was to say I got it right and I would go back and start again. And we did this, and the second week went, we practiced more about it, releasing the bow at the right time, because it's also releasing your shoulders, not pulling back and letting your finger let the arrow go. It's actually about the whole body working together to release the arrow. So we worked on all of that. On the third week, I went in, I pulled back the bow, my hip had moved forwards, and suddenly I let go of the arrow because my hips had snapped back into place. And it was, I turned to Karen and went, oh my God, I said, look at that. My hips have gone back. It's muscle memory. It's all of that. And it was a light bulb moment for me that you're actually not after the end behavior. You're teaching the muscles to understand what they have to do, and you get to the end behavior. So when you're teaching a dog to sit, it's not about the dog putting the bottom on the ground. It's the dog learning that all of these muscles work to be able to put the bottom on the ground. And that's what it is. It's about muscle memory and doing something repetitive so it just happens. And that's what happened to me that day. Great. It was just light bulb went on. I now understand what the clicker training, the marker training meant, and I just love it. And I think Teresa McEwen and tag teach is a wonderful way to go for anybody. They've got such a defined way of moving into the right point. It helps with golf, it helps with riding on horses, it helps posture. And Teresa's got some great videos on there regarding kids learning how to tie shoelaces. Joan Orr is the other person with tag teach, and Joan's got lots of ideas on there as well and videos of teaching her daughter's friend how to do a Frosby flop in 10 minutes. Just absolutely incredible.
I love those videos, and I'll link to those in the podcast write-up. Great stories there. Thanks so much for sharing. We're nearly at the end. Just one last thing before we finish up for the day though, can you maybe share with the audience listening what you would personally like to see happen in with the dog world I know we're talking about a program called Catalyst that's just come out before this.
In Australia.
And that's in contrast to some of the other dog shows that have been aired in the past previous years. What would you like to see happen, though, with one positive reinforcement animal training over, say, the next 5 to 10 years, and especially in the area of dog training?
I think I put it more as a respect. You know, they are domesticated animals. You know, dogs are living in our homes. They are part of the family. And I think when I sort of look at something, if I'm going to do something, if I wouldn't do it to a two-year-old child, why would I do that to my dog? So, you know, hitting a child, certainly in New Zealand, it's actually outlawed to hit a child here in New Zealand. So if I can't hit a child, why would I hit a dog? You know, I can't put a choke chain on a child or a slip chain on a child. Why would I do it to my dog? And I think that I prefer the relationship that comes out of a positive reinforcements compared to perhaps using some of the training tools that are available that I personally haven't used. I certainly don't agree with a lot of them. And I think that they do get results. But the result is one thing, but the fallout is tremendous. So if you use some of these less positive methods, the relationship with your dog is different. I like my dogs because they can push my wrong buttons and they can drive me batty. But if I go through and use some positive techniques, I can actually change their attitude and move them forward and get them onto what I would like them to do by being friendly. I think that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see a bit more respect for our dogs and look at things differently. Try not to put some old traditional methods onto our dogs and look at them as two-year-old children and see, would I do this to a young child or a baby if they're a puppy? And I think that if we have more respect for our dogs, we might find that our homes are a bit easier to live in and not so many challenges. And it's getting the right dog as well. You have to have the right dog for your family. It's no good having a hunting dog if you live in an apartment. Trust me, I've got two of those and they drive me batty and I've got a big, large area that they can run around on.
Karen, that was a lot of fun. And it was absolutely fascinating learning about truffle hunting today and just so wonderful to finally get an opportunity to catch up with you and finally get to do this podcast together.
Yeah, it's been awesome actually, Ryan. We've been talking about it for ages, haven't we?
Yeah, I think since Animal Training Academy started, we talked about doing this podcast. So it's good to get together today and finally make that happen. Just before I wrap up the podcast, just from me and everyone listening, Karen, a massive thank you for being a guest on the show today. It's been an honour to have you on board.
Awesome. Thanks, Ryan. It's been a pleasure.
I hope everyone out there enjoyed listening to that as much as we enjoyed making it. We have some really exciting and cool podcasts planned in the next couple of weeks, so definitely stay tuned in, including a two-part series on enrichment, and this is super applicable to zookeepers, vets, pet owners, and everyone that works with animals. The last week or so has been a lot of fun for me. I've really been trying to reconnect with all of you guys, and I actually spent one day last week sending out over 200 personal emails to people on my email list, just touching base and seeing how everything is going on a personal level. It told me that you're really appreciating the podcast because they allow you to connect with Animal Training Academy on the go, whilst you're driving, whilst you're preparing a meal, on your way to work or dropping the kids off, or just wherever you can in your busy schedules. So that was great to hear. Another thing was that a lot of people haven't yet engaged in the completely free online Training Tidbits course material. So if that's you, then I would love for you to get involved. The free course covers so many great things, from building relationships, target training, crate training, environmental arrangement, clicker training, positive reinforcement, patience, creativity, how to get started, filming your training. There is so much in there. 15 lessons, audio, video, written content, and quizzes. It will keep you busy for hours and hours. And once signed up, you can keep coming back and back to it. Another thing was, a lot of people haven't taken advantage of the free web classes yet. And this is where you can interact with me one-on-one. You can ask all your questions, and I share some of my personal life-changing and perception-changing stories from my experience. We go over my recipe for effective behavior management, which includes the 6 essential ingredients when managing your animal's behavior. You'll learn about a unique technique to help supercharge your training exclusive to Animal Training Academy. And it's something that you guys can implement immediately at home. I'm really excited about that and much, much more that goes into those free live web classes. They are so much fun. People are calling them truly inspirational. So jump on board. That's it for me though. As always, I'd love to hear from you guys. So leave a comment on the podcast write up And also on iTunes. I would love some cool comments on iTunes. I haven't really ever asked for that before, but that would be super appreciated. If you enjoy these podcasts, head over to iTunes and leave a little comment on there for people that have never heard of me before and stumbled across the podcast, and that would be really helpful. Other than that, though, that's it from me today. You've been listening to the Training Tidbits podcast series from Animal Training Academy. I will sign off, and you'll be hearing from me again very shortly. Ciao.